Morning, welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. Glad to have you with us, and we have a really interesting show for you today. It's always fun when Arthur Stein is here. Art is a financial planner based in Bethesda, Maryland, has a lot of federal worker and retiree clients, and so he knows a lot about the Thrift Savings Plan, which is their, for most, that's their primary investment outlet. And we were just talking about, we almost handed a gift today. What do we talk about? I hope you got a chance to take a look at today's column. The headline says, your TSP nest egg size does count. And we sort of reprise the fact that the number of millionaires in the Thrift Savings Plan is growing very, very rapidly. And at first, when this happened, the people who came, brought the money in were rich, most of them lawyers who'd been appointed federal judges, and they brought money into the Thrift Savings Plan. They switched over from their outside accounts to the government. But lately, the people who are becoming TSP millionaires are people who've been investing since day one. They stayed the course. You talk to them universally, and they did the same thing, which is not very much in some cases. And Arthur, don't you have some millionaire Fed TSP clients?
Yeah, I do.
I think I talked to a guy that said
he spoke to one time. Yeah,
yeah. And this theme in that you've suggested, the Warren Buffett quote about the stock market is the most efficient mechanism anywhere in the world for transferring wealth from impatient people to patient people. Think I know what you mean by that, but what do you mean?
What I mean is this, Mike, that historically, if you were in a well-diversified portfolio, which is certainly easy to do with the TSP funds, to make money in the stock market, all you really needed to do was buy and hold. Now, how long you needed to hold to have a really profitable investment, you know, varied. Sometimes it was 3, 4, 5 years. Sometimes it was 10 or 15 years. But basically, in most cases, the stock funds, certainly the C and the S fund, which are the U.S. stock funds, outperform the bond funds by a considerable amount over most time periods of 5 to 10 years. And they did it by, pretty large amounts. And we certainly see that in the 10-year returns for the TSP. Now, remember, the 10-year returns for the TSP include 2007 and 8, which was a worst stock market decline since the Great Depression. And in spite of that, the C fund averaged 7.4% a year, the S fund 8% a year. They completely outperformed the F fund, the bond fund, which was only 4.7% a year, and completely outperformed the G fund, which was 2.9% a year. Now, certainly, there were years when the stock funds underperformed. 2007 would be a pretty good example. The stock funds were down about 37-40%, pretty bad year. But if you held on, your 10-year return would have been great.
Well, and also, too, and correct me if I'm wrong, when the market drops, if you have some time, that's a buying opportunity, correct?
Absolutely. And for employed federal employees, you know, you're buying, you're making an investment every 2 weeks into the TSP. So when the market goes down, it's good for you because you're buying low.
I know personally for a couple of years there, I was putting money into our 401k plan. And at the end of the quarter or every 6 months, whenever you get the statement, nothing had happened. It was down, including my contributions. And there were long periods there where the only gain was my contribution. The funds hadn't made any money. And lo and behold, I did nothing, which I'm really good at doing. And then one day I opened up the prospectus they sent or the accounting they sent, and it had almost doubled.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's just patience. The stock market, you don't have to buy and sell at the right time to make money. You just historically needed to buy and hold for a long enough period of time and be well diversified. And that's why the TSP has index funds available for investment. You know, the S&P 500 is the index for the C fund, so you're in 500 stocks. And the S fund is small and mid-cap funds, and that's invested in even more companies than the C fund. So right away, you get a very well-diversified portfolio, and you don't have to worry about it.
In today's column, I mentioned the fact that you don't want to buy low, sell, you know, sell high and all that. People do the opposite.
No, no, you do want to buy low and sell high. You don't want to buy high and sell low.
I told you I was good at doing that.
I know. This is an important distinction, Mike.
Got an email from Ed in Andover, Massachusetts, and he said to ask you this. He said, your article in the TSP Nest Egg says if you don't transfer out of the CNS funds when there are sharp declines, you outperform the bond funds over longer periods of time. But isn't that what life cycle funds do on a daily basis? He said, I've been investing in the TSP for more than 30 years. 6 years until I reach my minimum retirement age. I do plan on early retirement. I'm in the 2020 fund. I do not make a lot of adjustments. I let it ride. But as time gets closer, only 6 years to go, I wonder if the 2020 fund is right for me. Should I pay close attention and make the changes manually to move funds between G, C, and F?
Okay. The problem is this with the life cycle funds, the L funds. The way that they work is, and let me take the L2050 funds as an example. That was introduced in 2010, and it sort of matures or becomes the L income fund in 2050. That's why it's called the L2050 fund. When it was introduced, 90% of the investments were in the C, S, and I funds, the stock funds, and only 10% in the F and G funds, the bond funds. But over time, that shifts on a regular basis, I think it's quarterly, to become more invested in the bond funds and less invested in the stock funds.
So it gets more conservative.
It becomes increasingly conservative. And in 2050, it goes into the L income fund, and the allocation of the L income fund is 80% bonds and only 20% stocks. And even worse, it's 74% G fund and 6% F fund. And so it's, you know, almost three quarters is invested in the fund that's had the lowest rate of return. And a fund that after you subtract out taxes and inflation is going to lose purchasing power almost every single year. And that's a tough way to make money. Now, many of your investors might have heard of the 4% rule, which says that if you're taking out, when you first begin taking withdrawals from your investments, if you start out taking 4% or less and then increase that by the rate of inflation, historically, you know, that money would have lasted 30 years. However, what many people don't realize is that 4% rule, which is now more like the 3.5% rule, but still pretty close, assumes that you keep the majority of your investment in stocks throughout your entire retirement, more than 50% in stock funds throughout your entire retirement. And if you go below that, then you're more likely to run out of money, not less likely to run out of money. So the L funds is doing what, as far as we can tell, historically would have worked the worst, which is to be 80% in bonds.
Okay, but at the beginning, like if you now here in 2016, if you were in the 2050 fund, you're that's pretty bold, isn't it?
Well, it's a more aggressive portfolio, but The question is, why are you becoming more conservative if you're not going to retire for 34 years?
Yeah.
You know, you don't need to become more conservative.
This guy said he's going to go out, I think, in six.
Yeah.
And he's in the 2050. Would you have any off-the-cuff advice for him?
Yeah, what I would say is, first of all, money you need to spend in 6 years probably shouldn't be in the stock market, because the stock market's good long-term investment, not short-term investment. But I doubt that Ed is, when he retires in 6 years, is going to take out all his money the first year and spend it. I mean, I don't know how old Ed is, but he's probably going to be retired 20, 30 to 40 years, and he needs to think about the money, how to invest the money he's going to need in 10 years and 20 years and 30 years and 40 years. And if he puts that in the F and the G fund, when he gets around to spending it at the purchasing power will have greatly declined.
Well, one thing, too, it seems to me that federal workers can afford to walk on the wilder side in many ways because increasingly they're going to be the only people left in this country with a defined benefit plan, a pension plan. You know, everybody's eliminating them right and left and going to making you do the contributing through a 401k, but the government still has these retentions. I want to ask you that when we get back from a break.
Okay,
here on
great,
federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, talking with Arthur Stein. He is a financial planner based in Bethesda, Maryland, and has a lot of federal clients in this area, both active and retired, including at least one TSP, Thrift Savings Plan millionaire, and I've spoken with him before, and he's a client of Art. Art, before the break, we're talking about the fact that federal workers get a defined benefit plan. That is, a CSRS has a very generous civil service annuity, which people pay for, and the FERS program also has a generous annuity, less so than CSRS, but a very generous annuity, particularly compared to everybody else.
Compared to everybody else, almost. And yeah, and many people think of their annuity as a bond-like investment, as, you know, sort of a guaranteed interest rate, and then decide as a result that they don't have to be as conservative with their actual investments in the TSP because they have this sort of bond-like investment.
And that's not a bad way to think, huh?
It's not a bad way to think. If psychologically you can afford to ride out
the
stock market ups and downs.
Yeah. Well, and as you say, if you're only taking out a little bit of your TSP money when you have a situation like 2007, 2008, you can, if you can psychologically ride it out, you can almost certainly so far ride it out financially. I've heard people refer to their federal annuity, their CSRS or their FERS annuity as the equivalent of a CD. If they live long enough, it'll be worth $1 million to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just, you know, federal employees, if they play their cards right, really should be very financially secure in retirement. And playing their cards right means that, you know, you keep your expenses below your income and that you have long-term care insurance. And when you retire, that you have money in the TSP or in other investments in order to supplement your annuities. And they just have a very attractive retirement package. Of course, another big advantage that federal employees have, and a lot of people don't think about it, but is they can, in most cases, certainly not all, work as long as they want. And lots of federal employees in 2007 and 2008, when the market crashed, many people who are thinking of retiring then postponed their retirement because it wouldn't have been a good time to start taking money out of your investments if the stock market was down so far and the bond market was down too, and the bond funds, not the G fund, of course. So that's a huge advantage compared to, you know, most people in the private sector. You know, I've friends who are lawyers, I'm sure you do too, and even my friend who's a senior partner in his firm, I mean, they make him retire at a certain point.
Yeah.
They don't care how valuable he is.
Yeah. Well, and I do, during the recession too, a lot of people took pay cuts in addition to losing jobs.
Yeah.
A 5% cut was not unusual. And I know several people who took a 25% pay cut for over a year, and that didn't hit feds too. So it's a good place to be. And as you point out, not only were people reluctant to retire during the recession, but they also don't like to retire when unemployment is high. Even if they're not going to get another job, the fact that they couldn't get another job if they wanted to seems to keep people in. I mean, they've proven that historically. And the retirement tsunami, first spotted in 1999, still hasn't happened. This tidal wave of people leaving the government still has not happened. No, retirements are normal to low, but it hasn't been this, you know, the last person out, turn out the lights kind of thing.
That's interesting.
Yeah. We live in interesting times. Government executive recently reported that because they think, because of the vote in the United Kingdom to leave the European Union, that many people in the Thrift Savings Plan took money out of the stock portfolios, I guess particularly the international, and shifted $1.8 billion with a B dollars into the G fund. How smart is that?
It didn't work out too well for them. I haven't looked at the international fund so much, but I did look at the C fund. And again, this is an instance of you wanted to be patient. Many people panicked, pulled money out of the stock market around Brexit, the vote in Britain to leave the European Union. They thought it would be catastrophic for stock markets and the countries involved. And it just turned out to be a big mistake. The C fund, for instance, hit its low point for the month on June 27th, which was, right around the Brexit vote. But for the month, it was up 0.3%. So if you did nothing, you made 0.3%. Mm-hmm. And if you took money out and didn't go back in, then you really don't feel good. Because in July, the C fund's up so far 3.5% in July alone. So you missed out on this big increase.
Yeah, the S&P and those, aren't they at all-time highs?
Yeah, and the, I fund's up in July. Certainly the S fund's up quite a bit. I mean, if they just held on, they would have made all that money in July. I mean, the market, in years when it goes up, people tend to think of it going up a certain amount every day or week or month. And it doesn't usually work that way. You get a few days or very short periods of time when you get a lot of the increase or decrease in the market values. You'd like to think you'd be able to get out and miss those decreases and then get back in. But people never do that. I personally have never spoken to anybody who got out of the market before a decline and then went back in at the bottom.
Yeah.
One, they normally get out towards the bottom. But I just had somebody in my office, and they did become new investment clients. But he told me, he said, in 2007, we pulled out before the stock market declined. And he felt very smart about it. And I said, well, what'd you do with the money? Mm. He said, well, I've never gone back in because it still doesn't look good to me.
Drum roll. Yeah.
Drum roll.
Yeah.
If he had just stayed in, he would have made 70% over the last 10 years. And if he got out, then he missed out on, 30, 40% of that appreciation. It was a big mistake. It's been a good long-term investment, and it's been the type of investment where, as you say, you don't need to do anything. I always, to me, I can be laying on my couch watching a pro football game, and if my wife says, why aren't you doing anything, I could say, well, I'm watching my investment.
Exactly.
And not doing anything is just a very good idea.
Inertia can rule
for you, and this is the point of Buffett and his quote.
Yeah.
You got to be patient.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the thing. I've talked to a number of people, very knowledgeable financial types like yourself, and they all say, maybe in different ways, the same thing. And a lot of them have clients who get out, and they feel very good about getting out because they missed out on the recession or the mini recession. But the university, they don't go back, or they don't know when to go back.
It never looks good.
Yeah,
it never looks good. If you thought it looked bad, you never have that feeling. And then if it goes up, then you think, well, I missed the big increase. I don't want to go back in now. It just, people don't work that way.
Well, I have two grandchildren that were, their father took them to Europe. These are little kids. And their father took them to Europe. They went to Scotland and they're going to go to France and I think Austria. And I, just to be a good grandfather, I bought them some, I went to the bank and got them some euros and some pounds so they know the difference and this is what's going to happen. And they were very appreciative. I think they got it, but they were very appreciative. And I went back to the bank a week later for something, and I happened to get the guy who sold me the pounds and the euros. And he said, hey, you ought to be a money trader because it went up during that time. Even after the BRITEX vote had taken place, the value of the pound went up in comparison to the dollar.
Okay. I will tell you this, that I was just looking at the Wall Street Journal, and the best performing stock market in Europe this year has been what's called the FTSE 100.
Oh, sure.
Which is the 100 largest companies in the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
And it's completely outperformed everybody else. So if you bought into that at the beginning of the year, you would have made 7.5%, and most of the other markets are down for the year.
Yeah. Well, you know, you look at the terrorist situation in Europe, Brussels, Nice, Paris, the priest whose throat was slashed this week in Normandy, and look at all the trouble. And there hasn't been anything yet in Britain, but I think a lot of people are reacting to these things with international markets, maybe for good reason, but they, as you're saying, they probably shouldn't react.
Hey, Europe definitely has, you know, issues. But most countries do. I mean, I certainly think we do in the United States, but it doesn't mean that the economy is going to slam to a halt.
In today's column in my Federal Report, I used some charts that you very kindly supplied me. What are they telling us? You got TSP returns from January to February 2016, and then the 10-year returns. What does that say?
Well, again, we're talking about just the issue of being patient with the stock market has historically paid off, and that, you know, the market had a big, big increase in July. And it did pretty well, actually, for the first 6 months of the year. Then it went up even more. But at the beginning of the year, I mean, February was horrible. Between January 1st and February 11th, the C fund was down 9%, the S fund was down 14%, the I fund was down 11%. And I think, again, a lot of people pulled out then. They got scared, they pulled out. Wasn't clear why it was going down so much, lots of different reasons. But if you stayed in it, all those declines disappeared.
Well, I mean, would it be oversimplification to say if the C fund was down 9 and the I fund, the international fund, was down 11, if you bought that month, were you buying it at a 9% or an 11% discount? Was it on sale by that much?
Certainly turned out that way, yeah, because, you know, the C fund, for instance, went from a 9% decline through a 8% gain by the July 22nd. And, you know, the I fund has continued to do poorly, but it was down 11% on February 11th, and it was only down 9% as of last week. So if you bought then, or if you were buying every 2 weeks, you ended up with a lot of gain money that you were investing at that point.
That's what they call dollar cost averaging, correct?
It is called dollar cost averaging.
Okay. We'll take a short break here, and I'll ask you to explain that when we come back here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Mike Causey here. Welcome to Your Turn. Talking with Arthur Stein. He's a financial planner based in the Washington area, and obviously he's got a lot of active and retired federal workers as clients. All right, may I ask you, how do you work? Do you work on commission, or is it?
Yeah, no, I don't work on commission. Most of my work is managing investments, mm-hmm. and I get a fee, which is a percentage of the assets, mm-hmm. which is probably the best way for people to have someone manage their investments. And I'm a registered investment advisor. I'm a fiduciary. There's been a lot of controversy about that, but I'm already a fiduciary. Mm-hmm. So I can only do what's in the best interest of my clients. Then I do a limited amount of retirement planning for people where they either pay me an hourly fee or a mm-hmm. flat fee, but it's mainly investment management.
Okay. And I remember a couple of years ago, I guess when the market was extremely rocky, you spent part of one of your, I believe, summer vacations on the phone and emailing people?
I was at the beach last August, and the market, you know, went down sharply, about 6 or 7%. And I had my laptop with me, so I just took 2 days, and I sat in the bedroom in this house we'd rented and mm-hmm. called all my clients and reviewed all their accounts and look for opportunities actually to buy stock mutual funds at a discount, which we did. And, you know, it worked out very well for people. I mean, normally with my clients, we decide on a certain allocation between stock and bond mutual funds throughout their portfolio. And so when the market goes way down, you know, the percentage buy, in stocks is gets to be low, and we buy to get it back on track. And the market gets real high, we'll sell and try and get them back on track. But that works very well for people because then we are buying low and selling high.
Right. And again, as simple as it is, almost everybody on earth in 60 languages knows to buy low and sell high. And yet so often people do the opposite.
Yeah, absolutely. But the stock market's so emotional.
Yeah.
People get worried, they panic, they get upset. So they tend to buy and sell at the wrong times. And there's lots of studies confirming that the average investor tends to buy into the stock market either directly or through mutual funds after stocks markets have increased a lot in value because they get enthused. And then when you get big market declines, they tend to get disgusted and sell, and they're constantly losing money.
I know Alan Roth, nationally known financial advisor with ARP, but he was with CBS Money Watch and written for the Wall Street Journal, and his motto is dare to be dull. And he says if you're having fun or you're excited by investing, you're probably doing the wrong thing.
Well, you know, dare to be dull was the way I was when I was dating.
And exactly.
It didn't work as well.
No.
It works okay with investing, but in some things it doesn't work well.
There are certain things, yeah. How do people reach you if somebody wants to?
My website is arthursteinfinancial.com, so www.arthursteinfinancial.com. And my email address is art@arthursteinfinancial.com. If you get on my website, I've got a blog, which you can read some of the articles. And if you want to get on my email list, you'll get a monthly newsletter and invitations when I do seminars.
Well, I know whenever I have you as a guest here on the show, I always ask you to send me some stuff, and it's always great.
Thank you.
I use it as the basis of the column. And looking at it today, these are charts supplied by you that are in today's Federal Report. But looking at the 10-year returns through June 30th, 2016, really fascinating. The safe G fund returned 2.9%. The F fund, the bond fund, 4.7% over 10 years. But the I fund, the international fund, was 3.2. That's not much, but it beats the G fund, the super safe G fund.
Yeah, and you know, if you look at the 1 year returns, you'll see that the actually the G fund beat the C fund and the S and the I fund. But that's short term.
Yeah.
Long term, 10 years, it was clear the C and the S funds did much better than the bond funds, and even the I fund, which was the laggard, really outperformed the G fund.
Okay, and your warning to people is don't be too conservative when you retire, because you're going to have to beat inflation. Correct?
Yeah, you need to think about the money you're going to be spending 10 years after you retire, 20, 30 years after you retire, and that should be invested differently. I mean, some people recommend, for instance, a bucket strategy, where if you're going to retire, say, at the end of this year, beginning of next year, figure out how much money you will need from your investments in the first, say, 2 years, and put that in like a CD or maybe even a bank account. So
Safe.
You don't have to worry about fluctuations in value.
I see. Yeah.
And the CD, you could say, I want it to mature at the beginning of the second year. Provide all the money I need to spend that year. The and if you're talking about the TSP, then of course the G fund is perfect because it does not fluctuate in value. The money that you need the next 3 to 7 or 8 years, maybe that amount of expenditures should go into the F fund or the F and the G fund. But once you get to the money you're going to be spending, you know, more than 10 years from now, I think that the C and the S and probably even the I fund are going to make a lot more sense.
And that's exactly what a lot of people, it's exactly the opposite of what a lot of people would think, correct?
And it's the opposite of what a lot of people would think, and it's the opposite of what they're told. What they're usually told is you need to become very conservative, have the majority of your money in the G fund and the F fund and bank accounts and CDs and things like that. But the studies that look at what would have happened to that strategy, you know, historically, again, all indicate that that was the wrong strategy. You were more likely to run out of money if you were that heavily invested. And, you know, we are looking at very long retirements today. I mean, if you retire at 65, you could easily be alive for 30 or 40 years. Now, I'm not saying the majority of people will be alive, but healthy people with good health insurance and good pensions, they tend to live a lot longer than the average American.
Yeah. I mean, and the federal annuity, as far as you, the recipient, are concerned, is forever.
It's forever, and it's got a great inflation adjustment.
Yeah.
And then there, you know, the FERS people are getting Social Security, which has a full inflation adjustment. And you just need to think about, I need to increase the purchasing power of my investments. Because money, you know, your investments look very differently when you're investing than when they do when you're withdrawing money to spend. When you're investing, even the G fund goes up in value every year. It just happens to go up very small amounts. But when you're withdrawing money, the amount you withdraw has to increase with inflation. And you have to pay taxes on all the money you withdraw out of the TSP. And that's when the purchasing power of the F and the G fund will probably decline over time.
Right. Well, you know, talking about this inflation protection, because the FERS people get CPI, Consumer Price Index, minus one percentage point. The CSRS people get a full cost of living adjustment, or COLA. And I remember at the Washington Post, I was doing the federal column, writing about federal workers, obviously. And I wanted to compare our plan, the Washington Post pension plan, with the federal retirement programs. And I called HR and I said, when is the last time Washington Post retirees got a COLA? And she said, what's a COLA? Which was
really?
My answer. Yeah. And doesn't exist in the private sector.
Some companies have it, but they tend not to, and they tend to be plans that are no longer offered to new employees.
Yeah.
You know, some some state and local employees have cost of living adjustments. Again, they tend not to be offered anymore to new employees.
Right. And some, you know, some companies have just flat out stopped them altogether. I used to know a financial planner, and he was talking about the same thing you were, people trying to time the market. And he said, think of it as two big ships in a very rough sea. They're going up and down. And in order to leave the market, you must jump and time that jump to land correctly. And even worse, coming back, you must time it. And that's a good example, but I like your yo-yo better.
Yeah. And let me just say about the ship example. Once people have made that first dangerous jump to getting out of the market, they don't want to do it again.
Yeah.
They don't want to jump again. The example that I use, Mike, is the stock market historically has been like a yo-yo.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a yo-yo. It's going up and down and up and down, but you're walking up a hill. And at some point, even when the yo-yo is at its lowest point, it's still higher than it was at its highest point further down the hill. And, you know, stocks and the stock funds in the TSP are incredibly volatile, which means they fluctuate in value up and down a lot. But historically, they've been volatile with an upward bias. Over time, they were going up.
The C&O Canal in Georgetown is at its lowest point, and as you move up toward West Virginia, where it begins, it gets slightly higher. So same thing, you have a yo-yo on that path. And when you get to
same
West Virginia, hopefully the yo-yo will be higher than it was in Georgetown.
Yeah.
Okay. What are you telling people these days? Oh, I'm sorry. Lauren Larson, our producer, is telling me to take a break here. So we'll do that. Be right back here on federalnewsradio.com. Hey, Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. Talking with Arthur Stein, a Washington area financial planner, and he's the subject of today's program and also my Federal Report column. Hope you'll take a look at it because there's some very interesting and useful charts in there about growth. And Arthur, like most financial planners, says cool it, don't panic, look before you leap, and then probably don't leap. Arthur, we've got so much going on in the world now. The terrorism, large scale as in Nice, and small, if you will, as in Normandy, but people are dying and unexpectedly in vacation places where they should be. Yahoo just sold?
Yes. Yahoo just parts of it. Most of it.
I mean, a lot of stuff going on. The United Kingdom has voted to get out of the European Union. There's controversy with the Olympics. We're always in Hillary Clinton is the Democratic nominee. Donald Trump is the GOP nominee. Some people are delighted with that. Some people are not. What are you telling people?
Well, I tell different things to different people, uh-huh. and it's not because I speak with forked tongue yeah. or out of both sides of my mouth, but because different people are in different situations. So I have people who are 10, 15 years from retirement, and they are heavily invested in stock and stock funds as a, you know, maybe 60, 70, 80% of their investments are in stocks and stock funds. I have people closer to retirement, and there we do more of a bucket strategy, like let's isolate the money you're going to need from your investments in the next, you know, 1 to 5 years, and put that in very safe types of investments. And then the other money, we're going to be, you know, more heavily invested in stocks because we need that long-term appreciation in purchasing power. And then, you know, I also have clients who maybe do have a lot of money in either the bank or equity indexed annuity or something like that. And then they can choose whether to take the money out of one or the other. So then, you know, their investments, again, we can be more aggressive if we want to, because if the market's way down, they can take money from another source and spend that, you know. And if the market's not down, if it's up, we can take money from the market when they need to take money out of their investments. So, you know, one of the things that's very different about being retired is you need to be strategizing not only about how to invest your money, but which accounts to use for withdrawals. And when you do withdrawals, should you take the money from bond investments or stock investments? Now, unfortunately, the TSP will not let you make that last decision. When you take money out of the TSP,
it's out of the whole thing.
Yeah, whatever the percentage allocation of your TSP investments is, your withdrawals are going to reflect that percentage allocation. So if you happen to end up with 20% in each of the five traditional funds, when you withdraw money, 20% of the withdrawal would come from each of the five traditional funds. That's not really the way you would want to do it. What you'd like to do when you're withdrawing money from your investment accounts is to say, well, gee, if the market's way down, it's like 2007 and market's down 40%, I don't want to take money out of stocks. I want to take it out of bonds, which were down, but, you know, 2-4%. Or if the market was extremely high, which it is now, then you would think, well, maybe I'll take the money out of stocks and not bonds because the market's high and I want to cash in and sell when, you know, I want to sell high and not low. And the same thing with the international, like maybe you'd prefer to take money out of the U.S. stock funds now and not the international fund because the international fund's not
doing well in the CSR.
Yeah, so it's a bad time to sell. People can't make that decision with the TSP, which is too bad.
Would it be possible, or would it be dumb, to change your allocation, say go from the 2050 fund to the present income fund, change your allocation and then take the money out and then change it back?
Yeah, but I understand what you're saying, yeah. Mike. You might say, well, gee, I want to take everything out of bond funds, mm-hmm. so I'll switch everything in the TSP. I'll switch everything into the bond
right.
fund, do my withdrawal and then reallocate.
Yeah.
And you can do that, and there's no charge to do that in the TSP, but that only works for a lump sum withdrawal.
Oh, I see.
And you can only make one lump sum withdrawal in your lifetime. If you're making monthly withdrawals, that strategy isn't going to work.
Okay. You mentioned earlier talking about things people need to consider, long-term care insurance. And as we all know, it's going up big time. I think it's 83% on average, $111 a month on average for the average premium, which means some are going up more than that, some less, but not a whole lot less.
Right.
That said, you're a big fan of long-term care insurance.
I think long-term care insurance is a great purchase for many, many, many people, and it really solidifies your retirement. I mean, one of my relatives is in a rehab facility right now. She's expected to be in there for a month. She's paying $500 a day. And before that, she was paying $500 a day for people to come into her home who weren't even trained nurses. It's incredibly expensive. And I would say, you know, the increases in the federal long-term care insurance program are just a reflection of what's going on with policies sold to individuals directly, not through the federal government. We're seeing these big increases. Hancock, John Hancock provides federal long-term care insurance policies. They're looking for the same 120% increase with the individual policies they sold to people directly. And I think that your listeners should hesitate to reduce their coverage. I don't think they should cancel their policy. You could not switch to a policy in the private sector in most cases and save money. There might be a few exceptions, but they would be very few.
Right. If you're older, which most people think are when they're thinking about insurance, if you have any health problems, good luck trying to find an individual policy outside the government.
You know, most of the people who buy long-term care insurance get an inflation adjustment.
Yeah.
So the maximum daily benefit's a lot higher now than it was, and they're older, so the premiums are a lot higher.
Yeah.
And, you know, the federal policy has very good benefits, and I know it's a blow and it's aggravating, but please, you know, don't cancel unless you have to.
Yeah. Well, our emails and phone calls, as you can imagine, have been steaming from people, and they just don't understand. They can't believe that the costs are up that much, but the actuaries say they are. People are living longer. They're going into assisted living for a longer period of time, and they're in pretty bad shape when they go in, and they're lasting a long time.
Increases that people have in their health insurance.
Yeah.
Art
Stein, thank you very much for being with us. We'll do this again very often. Everybody, have a good week. We'll see you next Wednesday.